If you do need a Bible, do please just put your hand up and one can be brought to you. And turn back, please, to page 63 in the blue Bibles. There is a translation available, so I don't know if that's available just to shine up briefly, but the translation code, do take a picture of that. If you need the QR code, that will take you to a website where you can choose the language of your choice. There are no sermon search prizes this week, but please do keep those coming. So, as Sam said, we find ourselves in Exodus chapter 22, and we're in the Book of the Covenant, as he said, which is applying the Ten Commandments in more detail to the life of Israel. And a brief explanation is needed this morning, because actually we're going to begin our sermon in verse 18. And therefore, we're going to miss out verses 16 and 17. I apologize. We might come back to those as a separate sermon at some point. There are good reasons for connecting and including verses 16 and 17 in this present passage. But there are also good arguments for including it in the passage before. And so sometimes it gets caught in a bit of limbo. And for that reason, we'll come back to it at a later date, maybe, and look at that the kind of topic that is thrown up by those specific verses. But you will see that in one way, our passage does begin with a new set of words. It says, "You shall not." Whereas the chapter 22, verses 1 through 17, they have come with, if a man does this, it repeats it a number of times, verse 7, verse 10. And then it gives a reason why, it says, well, then he should do that. And really what it's capturing there is it's giving example judgments that can help the Israelites make future judgments. So it's kind of case law. It's kind of for the law court. But now we move into commands, really, from God. You shall not, verse 18. You shall not, verse 28. You shall not, verse 29. And through on it goes right into chapter 23, right up to chapter verse 19 of chapter 23, where we continue to hear, you shall not, where God is applying the Ten Commandments, but in a more directed way. And so that's why we're going to just have this section, verse 18 through 31, that we're going to look at this morning. And so the title of our sermon is Covenant Loyalty. Covenant Loyalty. What did it look like for Israel? Because that's what God is demanding of them. He has established a covenant with them at Sinai, and he is saying, listen, I am looking for covenant loyalty. What does it look like for Israel? And what does it look like for you and me this morning? Because we are his covenant people. So it's a real question. What does your covenant loyalty look like? What does mine? What does HCC as a church, what does its covenant loyalty look like? And we can say it should look like devotion to the Lord. That's a big statement in verse 31. Can you see that? He says, you shall be consecrated to me. So here comes God with a major big statement, which you could say fills up the whole of the Book of the Covenant. It looks back over the things of the covenant, and it looks forward over the things of the Book of the Covenant. And it says, you shall be consecrated to me. You shall be devoted to me. And out of that devotion will flow purity. And out of that devotion will flow a separation from the world. And it will mark you out as God's covenant people. So as we begin to think about Israel's covenant devotion to the Lord, we see that God begins this section here in verse 18 onwards with some non-negotiables of relationship. If we're to be devoted to the Lord, then there are non-negotiables of this relationship. And we're going to just think briefly about three of them. One is exclusive worship, one is exclusive trust, and one is exclusive submission. So let's think about exclusive worship. You see, those opening verses in 18, 19, and 20, they kind of come as a unit together. And verse 20 is the climax of that small little unit. So let's read verse 20 together. Whoever sacrifices to any god other than the Lord alone shall be devoted to destruction. They shall be put to death. A strong language. Israel's worship is to be of the Lord alone. They are not to replace him, add to him, or take away from him, or rename him. They are to worship him as he reveals himself to them. If they fail to worship the Lord as he reveals himself to them, they will stop being God's covenant people. So covenant loyalty is to worship God in truth and to worship him only. That marks out God's covenant people. But if Israel is to show covenant loyalty, they will also need to show exclusive trust in their God. Look at verse 18 this time. You shall not permit a sorceress to live. What was a sorceress? What was a sorcerer? Well, they were one who by magic reached out to the spiritual powers other than the Lord. And people came to sorcerers to seek solutions for their lives. And the sorcerers, they were common in Egypt, they were common in Canaan, but they were not to exist in Israel. They would turn the people's trust away from God. Now, why does it say sorceress there? Why does it use the feminine form of the noun? Well, most likely it was because this area of magic was dominated by women. And that is why sorceress is used here. But we are to understand that this command is speaking to both male and female sorcerers. They are to be put to death. They are not to live in the land. So for Israel, covenant loyalty meant exclusively trusting in the Lord, always and only turning to him for guidance and help. If Israel begins to seek other powers for help and guidance, and she allows that practice to spread in the nation, she will stop being God's covenant people. So exclusive worship of the Lord is non-negotiable. Exclusive trust in the Lord is non-negotiable. And exclusive submission to the Lord is non-negotiable. Look at verse 19. Whoever lies with an animal shall be put to death. Now that statement, lies with, is a sexual statement. And notice this command is placed between two commands that carry a strong sense of worship to them. Now, why is this command placed between these two kind of worship commands? Well, if Israel is to show covenant loyalty, they need to be willing to submit to God, not only as their savior and redeemer out of Egypt, but as their creator. They must be willing to submit to what he has made them, willing to submit to the boundaries he has placed on them for their good. For a person to lie with an animal is to cross one of the great creation boundaries given to humanity. God made humans for sexual relationships between one man and one woman within marriage. And verse 19 reveals one of the most extreme violations of this God-given boundary. And God is saying to Israel, you can't claim to worship me and trust me if you don't accept my created boundaries for you. May I be blunt? Sex outside marriage violates God's covenant creation boundaries. Sex between the same sex violates God's creation boundaries. Declaring your own gender violates God's creation boundaries. And you can't rebel against your Creator's boundaries and still worship him. I plead with you this morning, if that is you in any of those forms, turn from your rebellion and live. To push on down this road of rebellion is death. There is no life there. But there is another challenge from these opening verses. At HCC, we rightly place a big importance on worshipping our God in spirit and in truth. We don't want to add to his revelation of himself, nor do we want to take away from it. We want our worship to be exclusive to the Lord. But do we trust him in our daily lives? To whom or to what are we reaching out? When confusing and difficult situations happen, do we reach out for the Lord or for some other power? Do we reach for our God or some sorcerer? There are many things that are legitimate in one way to life. Finances are essential. But are we reaching for them first? Is our trust in them? Biological family is a great blessing, but are we trusting in them above trusting in the Lord? Do we go to them before we go to the Lord? The world offers us so many powers to reach out to first. But God's loyal covenant people reach out to him in all situations. So it is good to have our theology of our God deep and true. That is good. But it needs to be matched by an exclusive trust in him in all situations. Dear brothers and sisters, these are serious things. These commands are non-negotiable. Feel the force of them. Verse 18, you shall not permit. Do you feel that? Don't let it happen. And in each of these commands, it results in death for those that don't go with it. Let us together encourage one another in exclusive worship, exclusive trust, exclusive submission to our God. This is covenant loyalty. So in verse 18 through 20, we've been applying, in a way, we've been talking about how this book of the covenant applies the Ten Commandments, and here we've been applying the first three commandments in a way. You shall have no gods except me. You shall make no idols. You shall honor my name. We've been unpacking those in a bit more detail. And this application of these first three commandments continues in this passage. If we go to verses 28 through 31. And what does covenant loyalty look like here? Well, it looks like wholehearted devotion. So you can see devotion is at the heart of our covenant behavior. And this devotion comes with a quickness and a completeness to it. Look at verse 29. You shall not delay, there's the quickness, to offer from the fullness of your harvest. There's the completeness of it. And you can see that fullness here, it's speaking of the first and the best. Bring your harvest, bring your crops, bring your grain. And also the outflow of your press. Bring your wine from the grapevine. Bring your oil from the olives. Bring those things. Make sure you bring them quickly. Don't delay. Bring the best. That's what's being called upon. And bring your firstborn sons and your firstborn animals. Now, of course, Israel's firstborn sons would ultimately be substituted for the Levites. They would be the ones who stood in their place. And even the animals could be redeemed at a price as well. But otherwise, they had to be sacrificed. But in calling Israel to bring their firstborn, God is reminding them of his compassion. Compassion is something that's going to flow through the rest of this passage. God is a God of compassion, as he says in verse 27. And this reminds them of their compassion because God identified their firstborns back in Egypt, when he actually, he killed all the firstborns of Egypt, but he spared the firstborn of Israel and he brought them out of Egypt with compassion, with mercy, with justice. And so this is an act of remembrance and they're to do it quickly. They're not to delay. And yet we are told in verse 30 that they are to wait 7 days, and then on the eighth day, after the animal has been with its mother, then they are to bring it. And that reminds us, in a way, doesn't it, of circumcision. It sounds very similar to that, where the boys, even the firstborns and the boys, they were all circumcised on the eighth day. They waited 7, and on the eighth day, they were brought before the Lord. And so there is a sense here of a sacred act. Yes, wait 7 days, then bring it on the eighth day. But don't delay after that. Don't go to the ninth. Don't go to the tenth. Bring it on the eighth. In all of this, Israel is not to delay. They are not to hold back the rightful things that should go to God. And they're not to hold back their hearts from God. The devotion is to be a devotion of the heart. And this devotion, this covenant loyalty, is not only for the big events of their lives, like these public offerings, but for the small events, the unseen events. Israel's devotion is to be 24/7. Look at verse 31. You know, we've got this great statement, "You shall be consecrated to me." That's a summary big statement. And you might think that what comes next is going to be some big event. Therefore, some big event, like the big events that we've been looking at. Therefore, sacrifice to me. Therefore, keep my name holy. Therefore, bring these offerings. Instead, it looks like a bit of an anticlimax. You shall be consecrated to me. Therefore, you shall not eat any flesh that is torn by beasts in the field. You shall throw it to the dogs. This requirement seems out of place. It seems so small and so ordinary. And that's God's point. Covenant loyalty, wholehearted devotion is found not only in the big events that everyone sees, like the offerings and the gathered worship, but in the small everyday events that nobody sees. I think you get a bit of sense of that in this illustration in verse 31. You can imagine a man walking out in the fields and he comes across an animal that is dead. It would have been a clean animal, but it's been made unclean because it's been killed by a predator, which was unclean. So now it's unclean. But he suddenly comes upon it. Maybe it's a really good choice of meat. Maybe his family is hungry. Maybe they're poor. And he says, "Wow, no one is around. I could put this on my shoulder. We'll have meat for a couple of weeks." And then he says, "No, I'm devoted. I'm devoted to Yahweh, the Lord. He's made me clean. I'm in covenant with him. I won't do it." As God's covenant people in Christ, what does our devotion look like? Is it quick? Is it complete? Is it 24/7? On a Sunday we gather. Is it full of love for the Lord and trust in him in our hearts? Are we quick and complete with our sacrifice of praise? Can we look over the songs that we've sung, the scriptures that we've read? What did it look like? But what about the rest of the week? What about when we suddenly meet a carcass in the field on our laptops? A website that's unclean. Do we declare, "We are in covenant, I'm in covenant with my God"? And does our covenant loyalty show itself in that situation? Is my heart won by my God? Or when on that same laptop we are tempted to buy something we don't need, are we quick to click? But are we slow to bring our money to God? What is the first thing we do with our wage? Is it to bring the first and best to God? Or is it to delay? And then we see it used up on other things we don't need. There are many ways we can test how we are showing our covenant loyalty to God, in the big and in the small. So we thought about Israel's covenant loyalty towards God. But in verses 21 through 27, we begin to think about their covenant loyalty and duty to their fellow Israelite, to their neighbor. And in a way, when we start looking horizontally, then we know that we're kind of beginning to apply the last five commandments of the Ten Commandments, those ones that are summed up in love your neighbor as yourself. And what does covenant loyalty look like there? Well, it looks like in this situation, God brings home that it looks like justice and compassion toward the vulnerable. Justice and compassion towards the vulnerable. Of course, we should have justice and compassion for all, but there is a sense that God has a soft spot for the vulnerable. And he calls his people to make sure they follow that. And so there's a question, do we love justice and compassion for the vulnerable like our God does? That's the challenge. Are we in step with our covenant God as his covenant people? And so there's four groups of vulnerable people mentioned here. There's the sojourner in verse 21. That's the resident foreigner who lives in Israel, seeking to live and survive. Maybe they've been there a little while, but they are there. They're looking to stay there for some time. And why are they vulnerable? Well, because they have no land. Think about it. When Israel eventually gets to Canaan, God is going to give it as an inheritance to the tribes of Israel. All the land is going to be allocated. So the foreigner that comes has no land. And they have no family, no extended family anyway. And they have no history in the land. And so they are vulnerable to exploitation. Now, I'm not saying that the foreigner here perfectly matches the foreigner, let's say, in the UK. You will have to apply that and think that through and try to apply the principles of compassion and justice in the right ways. What we're focusing in on here is vulnerability. And clearly, they were vulnerable in the time of Israel. And God says in verse 21, you shall not wrong them. You shall not wrong them. You shall be just and you shall be compassionate towards them. That's what he's calling for. And then he mentions two different sets of people, the widow and the child, the fatherless child. And of course, they go together in verse 22 often. And the widow, why is she vulnerable? Because she has no husband. In a culture and a land where her protection depended on the husband, where her means of living depended on the husband, she had no husband. She became vulnerable. And if her family or extended family did not show justice and compassion, she would be in a real place of exploitation. And the same is true for the fatherless child. He too has lost his father, the one who is his support and guide and provision and protection. And he is vulnerable. Again, he needs the compassion of the people around him. And even if he has his mother, well, of course, she's lost her husband. They are vulnerable together. And God says, do not mistreat them. Don't mistreat them. Show them justice and show them compassion. You know, the justice of God is very similar to his compassion a lot of the time. They are remarkably close. And then the fourth group is the indebted poor of Israel. And why are they vulnerable? Well, they have virtually nothing. They are living on the edge of existence to the point where they have had to take out a loan. Not a loan so they can get a luxury or an item they want, a loan to survive. And God says, you shall not mistreat them either. Let's look at that situation just a bit more closely in verse 25. If you lend money to any of my people with you who is poor, So it's not wrong to lend money. At least that's the picture, isn't it? That to ask to borrow and to lend is not wrong in itself. You shall not be like the money lender to him, and you shall not exact interest from him. So you shall not charge interest within Israel, within your covenant people. You shall not charge his interest. You shall not be calculating in your lending. You shall not be saying, how do I get this back necessarily? Of course, we will see that there are reminders that it's to be returned. That's what the pledge is about. The pledge is given, the security, so that there is a reminder that this loan should be repaid. But in Israel, God's people, they are not to give in a calculating way that that if they don't get it back, it's the end of the world. They give with compassion. They don't charge interest. If ever you take your neighbor's cloak in pledge. So in this situation, the guarantee that is given of returning the loan is his cloak. That's how poor he is. He's gone down. He hasn't got anything else of value. And here we see the compassion of God. He says, if that's the case, you give that back at nighttime. And you hear God's compassion in the words that he says. For that is his only covering. And it is his cloak for his body. In what else shall he sleep? If he cries to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate. And so we see God's heart. And that's important as we continue to think about these things, that we see the heart of God towards people. That's the heart we're wanting to share. Well, let's look at two reasons why Israel is to be compassionate towards the vulnerable. And the first one is, what's done against the vulnerable is done against God. In some way, that is true. Of course, all sin is against God ultimately. But again, there is a way in which God is saying, listen, I take special recognition of that exploitation of the vulnerable. And so listen to what he says in verse 23. He says, if you do mistreat them and they cry out to me, I will surely hear, and my wrath will burn, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall become widows and your children fatherless. God says, I will do to you what you have done to them. There is a sense in which whatever is done to the vulnerable is done against God. I don't know if you ever remember as a child maybe, but traveling in the back of a car and maybe your parents were in the front and you're old enough and big enough to get your foot and really shove it in the back of the chair, and you're pushing your foot as hard as you can into the back of the chair, and eventually your parent says, stop that, you're kicking me in the back. And you kind of go, no, I'm kicking the chair. And they say, I'm feeling it in my back. This is what God is saying. If you withhold justice from the vulnerable and you withhold compassion, you are kicking me. I'm feeling it. And if they cry to me, I will hear. Do we see our attitude toward the vulnerable and our treatment of the vulnerable through this lens? That mistreatment of the vulnerable is against God? If we do, how might it reshape our behavior this week? I'm speaking to myself. I want to change in this area. I want to grow in compassion. I want to become more in step with the compassionate heart of my God. I'm not where I should be. What about you? This isn't kind of optional aspects of God's character. And the second reason why Israel is to be compassionate towards the vulnerable, we've already been saying it. God is compassionate. It's in his nature. It's his nature to be compassionate. That's what he said in verse 27, didn't he? He said, for I am compassionate. That's the reason he gives for why he behaves as he does and why he calls Israel to behave as they should. And notice, God's compassion leads to a burning anger when he sees justice obstructed. Look back at 23 again, verse 23. If you do mistreat them and they cry out to me, I will surely hear their cry and my wrath will burn. If I see you obstructing justice and they cry out, my wrath will burn, says the Lord. Imagine an ambulance and it's speeding down an empty road. It has a mission. It wants to get to the vulnerable. And you could say to a certain degree that compassion is moving it along the road. And then what happens when it meets obstacles? Well, that compassion makes a noise. The horn blasts and the sirens sound. And woe betide you if you don't get out of the way. That's the compassion of God. In the same way, when justice is obstructed in Israel, God's compassion burns with anger. And God says to his covenant people, I am compassionate. It is in my nature. You know, we get angry about a lot of different things. And we have a lot of opinions in this world. But it will be good to check them against this reality. Where is compassion? How is it motivating my anger? What is motivating it in the issues of the world? Where is justice fitting in? And have I really got the right end of the stick on this? There are things for us to think through in that way. And so God's church, his covenant people, we are to show the same compassion as our God. Why? Because he is compassionate. And we are his children. And we're to want to share his heart for the vulnerable. Lord, help me to move in that way. But another reason is given, isn't it, in this passage, in verse 21, where he says to them, in verse 21, whoever, he says, you shall not wrong a sojourner or oppress him, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. Oh, Israel, you should have compassion because you were in Egypt, you were enslaved, and you were freed by my compassion. And the church, we should have compassion because we were enslaved in sin. We were lost and without hope. And then Jesus Christ came and he died on the cross. He took our place. The firstborn did. And he brought us liberty. And he brought us life. And he did it in compassion and mercy. We didn't deserve it. And so we say, Lord, both for who you are and for what you've done, let me imitate you. And so we see an important principle for us as Christians. Our loyal covenant behavior doesn't flow from a set of rules. It doesn't flow because people say charity is nice. It flows from the knowledge of who God is and what he has done. Our ethics flow from the nature of God. Why we do what we do. And when we show compassion to the vulnerable, we aren't wasting time. It can take a lot of time, but we're not wasting time. We are joining our God in what he loves to do. I was walking by the canal. I saw a little young lad sitting on the edge of the canal. Just sitting there. Was he wasting his time? Well, he was sitting there with his dad and they were fishing. He wasn't wasting his time. He was with his dad. And when we reach out to the vulnerable, we are with our Father. He is there. He is in it with us. We're not wasting our time. But maybe you are sitting here this morning and you say, I am vulnerable. I am vulnerable. And God hasn't shown up for me. Well, I'm sorry if that's you. But may I ask you, have you cried out to him? Did you see that in the passage? Verse 23. If you do mistreat them, and if they cry out to me, I will surely hear their cry. Verse 27 at the end. If he cries to me, I will hear. We need to cry. The vulnerable need to cry. They need to call out to the God who hears. And he will answer. How do you know he will have compassion for you? How do you know his compassion will reach you? Well, dear friend, it's already reached out to you on the cross. The God who came and died on the cross has reached out to you. Call out to him. He will hear you and he will help you. Amen.